There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Let's get a bit more insight now on a story that I know our colleagues on Dubai Eye were following in some detail yesterday. Dubai police have teamed up with a local technology company to put driverless patrol cars on the road within 2 years. Joined in the studio now, delighted to be by the founder and CEO of that tech company, Akakas Technologies, Talal Ben Halim. Talal, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
This seems like science fiction. Convince me that it is not.
It's not because we actually have a vehicle that we've tested and it's being tested on the road. It's not because the underlying technologies have been tested for years and the underlying platforms have been developed for years. So it actually is real.
Now, this is, as I understand it, retrofitting autonomous technology to existing cars. How does that work?
Yeah, so the underlying platform obviously is a vehicle. We're not into building vehicles. Obviously, many companies do that. But what we do is we put in the control systems that allow you to control the throttle, the steering, and the brakes of the vehicle. And then we build the software and sensors that allow the vehicle to make the decisions.
You're described as a Dubai-based company. How much of the technological work is actually happening here, and how much is happening in the tech centers that we think of? We think of the United States, the East and West Coast. We think of China. We don't think of Dubai as one of the technology capitals of the world.
Yeah, my background is in applied research in Dubai, and that was one of the goals then, is to break down that barrier and break down that kind of perception that everything has to be done overseas for it to actually work. And I should say also that the boundaries of technologies have already been broken down. So a lot of the technologies we use in any technology that we build is partially built somewhere else. Nobody builds everything from the scratch, kind of from the ground up. So a lot of the underlying technologies that we use now were built by Google in some cases, were built by other companies.
And they're now available, and you can buy them as third party, either components if they're physical or bits of code and software.
Exactly. And the key that we're doing is, especially for AI, you need to train it. And the more you train it, the better it becomes. And so what we're specifically doing is training it so that it's good on the roads of Dubai and it works well on the roads of Dubai.
Analysts globally say that the hardest part of self-driving and autonomous cars is going to be the transition. While we've got people like myself behind the wheel next to it, it doesn't know what I'm going to do. If I was a machine, it would understand where I was going and that we'd be watching each other through sensors, but it has no idea what I'm going to do. How well do you think this is going to cope with non-autonomous cars around?
Yeah, and that's the biggest challenge for driverless, and why it's much easier to get a driverless drone than it is a vehicle, because you don't have other human-driven drones flying around it in close proximity. So yes, that's a really good question, and that's why you have so many sensors around the vehicle. So we have 2 eyes. This vehicle has 10 eyes, and it's looking at all of them at the same time and analyzing all of them at the same time. So that's why we build the redundant sensory equipment in the vehicle, so that we can make decisions where we don't know what others are doing.
Well, let me ask you a few simple questions. If I came up fast behind your car and looked like I was going to ram it, what would the car do? Swerve out of the way, speed up, what would it do?
So if you, let's just take another example. If you rammed into the car, just you wanted to crash into the car and you just smashed into it.
If I wanted to?
Yes, if you wanted to.
Yeah.
And you actually smashed into it, you would be in a car accident. So there's limitations to what the vehicle itself can do. There's only so much it can speed up. There's only so much it can do to get out of the way. So within those limitations, the artificial intelligence is trying to make decisions. But obviously, there are physical limitations to what the actual vehicle can do.
Obviously, you'll have been following very closely events in Arizona recently where somebody was killed when they were hit by an Uber self-driving car. You'll also have been following closely the story in California where a Tesla that was in autonomous driving mode crashed and the driver was killed. What have we learned from those two incidents?
Well, from the last incident, I think we learned that autonomous at night is much less effective than autonomous in the day because of the limitations of camera and sensory equipment at night. I think there are many other things that we can learn and we will continue to learn. The main point, I think, is that we shouldn't shy away from the technology because there have been incidents. I think, especially in Dubai, with kind of the vision of Dubai in terms of moving forward, we should continue to look at those challenges and face them head on and not say, okay, there was an accident, so let's not do this.
I guess I would say, you say that the cameras, the sensors don't work quite as well at night, but a lot of the two of the fatal accidents recently have been during the day.
And actually, the last one was at night.
Yes, but the one where the Tesla driver was killed was blindsided by a white truck. We have very sunny conditions here. How the sensors going to cope?
Well, again, Tesla is a little bit different because Tesla, they refuse to use LiDARs. They want to depend only on radar and camera. Obviously, we're using multiple sensory equipment to make sure that the systems are redundant.
So, some acronyms there. Okay. What's the difference between LiDAR and radar?
Okay. So, a LiDAR is basically it's a laser-based radar system that can detect objects that cameras wouldn't otherwise easily be able to detect. So, cameras, they would see an object in 2D and try to analyze what it is. A LiDAR can do a little bit better than that in terms of analyzing, for example, is it a paper bag flying across the street or is that a small animal running across?
This is all part of a move to a smarter Dubai. And if I was a traffic police officer, I'd be highly offended if somebody suggested to me that my patrol car would be smarter without me in it.
I agree.
So how do we cope? I mean, presumably this will have people in it, will it?
Yeah. Initially, yes, for testing. But the idea is we want to augment what the police are doing. We're not trying to replace humans. Obviously, people are very good at what they do. But we're trying to augment that. And let me just give you a quick example. We have forensics specialists within the police department. And what they do is they look at accidents and analyze, but there are very few of them and they can't be at every accident at the same time. So what they usually do is look at a vehicle that's been towed to their department. So with an autonomous vehicle that has cameras set up on it that can go to a site, they can remotely analyze. So we wouldn't be removing the forensics expert from the equation, but we would be enabling them to do more.
So will there be police officers in the cars?
I assume that there would. That's not my decision. That would be the decision of the police department.
One of the prime functions of highway patrol cars around the world is to chase and stop dangerous drivers and errant motorists of all types. I mean, a driverless car is going to be able to fulfill that function?
No, that specific function, that's not the goal of the driverless vehicle.
They're there to go and check out an accident, use their cameras to scan and see what they're
doing. Exactly, and carry out patrols on a broader basis.
We've had lots of SMSs in, some people passing a comment on autonomous cars. Thank you very much indeed. Aidan writes in, autonomous cars can't be any worse than the drivers currently terrorizing many of our roads. Bring it on. Thank you very much indeed, Aidan. Another message in from Andy this time, autonomous vehicles great, many drivers here shouldn't be allowed to drive, and he says hopefully there will be fewer bullies, egos, intimidation, lane hogs and tailgating. Andy, you make a good point, but as well as the comments, we've always got some questions. Kareem has a question similar to Malcolm's, but I'm going to put it to you anyway. Kareem says, for which purpose exactly do you plan to use these autonomous police cars?
So our specific goal is to enable the technology. The way that it's used is up to the actual end user, in this case, the police department. So we're going to be working with them and the various departments, sub-departments within the police force to see how it can best be used. But that decision would be with them.
How many cars have you agreed to fit out? What is the contract for?
So the contract doesn't specify the number of cars. Right now what we're doing is we're analyzing the needs of the department. We're planning on building 4 test vehicles right now.
And that's what you think will be on the roads by 2020, the 4 cars?
No, we think there'll be many more than 4 vehicles by 2020.
Looking at your company, Akakis Technologies, based here in Dubai, you have an interesting background, Libya, Greece, the United States, you're here in Dubai. How do you, as a tech provider for autonomous vehicles, compete with some of the big names in the industry? I'm looking at a list of the most funded autonomous car startups in the world. You've got NIO in Shanghai, has raised more than $1 billion. So has Argo.ai, many others, Future Mobility Products, and so on. There are many companies looking to be technology providers in terms of autonomous vehicles. What's your edge?
I'd say it's not definitely not $1 billion in the bank. That's not our edge. What we do have is, like I said, we have local specialization. So right now, today, we have 15,000 cameras in RTA vehicles, and they are actively analyzing the environment around them. So whether you're a $1 billion company based in California or in China, you just won't have the amount of data and analytics that we have locally.
We've had people who are involved in the building of driverless cars, and the one thing that they've all agreed is that getting around in driverless cars is going to be much slower, because they don't drive at the same speed we drive. So
yes,
it might take up to sort of 20, 30, 40, 50% longer to get from A to B. Don't you see that as a downside for the technology?
It depends on what you're trying to do. So it depends.
From A to B quickly. Get to work on time.
Well, you could also do work in the vehicle that you wouldn't otherwise be doing while you're driving. So
good point.
So the idea is when we have new technologies, people don't usually. They usually try to do things differently and end up doing things differently. And we think that that will carry on with driverless vehicles.
If Brandy Scott were here, and by the way, we've sent her home this morning because she had some kind of virus. That's why you're not hearing her voice, but she's fine. If she was here, she would refer to her experience with Ford in Detroit about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, and she went there. And she was driven in a driverless vehicle. And she said, to Malcolm's point, it was like being driven by my terrified granny. She said it was just infuriating, frustratingly so, that she just wanted to get in the front seat and drive the damn thing.
Well, it reminds me of the 80s when I was, you know, on my PC back then and I was trying to play, you know, a video game and it wasn't working as fast or as good as I wanted it to at the time. I think that the technology is going to get better and better and better and smarter and faster and more agile as we move along.
And of course, I suppose the ultimate prize is when every vehicle is self-driving and then we can speed up the whole process. Everybody will know what they're doing.
I don't think that's ever going to happen, Malcolm, unfortunately, or fortunately. It's like radio people, you know, with TV, people thought radio is never going to be, you know, this is going to replace a radio, but radio found its space and place in the world, and people still listen.
Long may that last.
Finally, the standard ethical question that everyone involved in autonomous vehicles gets asked: what if the car is driving at speed and it can either swerve to avoid a small child in the road, but to do that it would have to plow into a group of pensioners? How does the car decide this?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. There's a lot of research on it. I can give you the short version of my answer, and usually the assumption is that I'm either going to kill somebody on the road or somebody on the sidewalk. That input as a definitive outcome is usually not an input for an autonomous vehicle. So the decision is not kill or kill. It's usually do I go right or left? And so that, again, so it's basing on its inputs, what the decision should be. The input is almost never the outcome of death.
So it wouldn't actually make a value decision, say, not to plow into a group of school kids,
exactly,
but to go into a bunch of pensioners,
exactly,
because they're older. It won't make a decision like that.
It won't make that, and it won't know the outcome of what happens if it goes right or left.
I don't know if that reassures me or not. or Tarek, who also writes in saying, how are you dealing with the fear among the masses and a few radio presenters? It has been...
It will drive very slowly.
It has been fascinating talking with you, Talal. Thanks very much indeed. Don't be
me.
A stranger. Come back.
I will.
Talk more about autonomous cars. Talal Ben-Halim, founder and CEO of Akakis Technologies.
Thank you.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.